Our podcast will begin in just a moment. Our podcast production and distribution made possible each day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. We want to keep you posted on the many KPP investment programs. One is called Balanced Income. It provides steady yield for those with little appetite for risk. This investment approach primarily focuses on attaining an income stream through stable dividend-paying companies and quality corporate bonds. We will also purchase other income-producing securities, such as preferred shares or treasury bonds and notes. Find out more about it on investtalk.com. Just look for the Investments tab. And now, today's Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our June 22nd, 2016 edition of Invest Talk, and we are here to help you, help answer your questions, help you become an above average investor. Now, investing in stocks or even bonds is never a straightforward endeavor. And there's different tactics, different strategies that you can apply to various areas of the market. Now, one of the areas that gets the most attention from the general public are high-flying growth stocks, the exciting names, the Teslas of the world, which is in the news, the Netflixes of the world, which hasn't been doing so well, the Facebooks of the world, that also hasn't been doing so well as of late. But, you know, these are exciting to people. Big price gainers happen every year. And people look at those returns and they say, what if? What if I can pick the next one? I could get those returns too. Or maybe that one is going to continue to go. That's what usually the most often reaction is. Oh, if it was up X amount last year or X amount over this period of time, it's going to, let me hop in and ride this train. The problem is that most people tend to miss the boat. They get in too late. They get in when it's finally hit the media, and that's usually past the bulk of the gains. And it opens themselves up to disappointment and increased risk. So usually those same returns that happen in the recent past are not going to happen in the recent or the near future. Now, there are some quantitative and qualitative factors that can give investors an indication of whether or not the company will have a fall from grace. It could be growth levels, the type of industry that they're in, their competitors, etc. Now, there are many growth stocks that made big runs recently and held on to those gains. Think of the Apples of the world and the Googles of the world. But there are many more that have had similar gains in short periods of time and have fallen hard and destroyed portfolios of those who got in during the hype and the hysteria. Think of Research in Motion. Think of Green Mountain Coffee. Remember the pods, the Keurigs? Everyone got excited for those. And there will be more. There's a lot of IPOs that have fallen flat. Think of Fitbit and GoPro. Now, what all investors must analyze when looking at growth companies is how these companies achieved their growth, whether or not they can hold on to the customers that they have acquired long term. What kind of moat have they built around their business? What competitive advantages have they created? Are they just first movers, meaning they were the first to get into that area of the market? Or were they just a flash in the pan business? A lot of the time, when first movers are flash in the pans, meaning they just don't have competition. So that's why they grow. But are they really the best at executing in that industry? If not, there's probably another in the industry that's better at executing. Maybe they're not quite as innovative, but they're just going to go and copy it and steal the thunder of the first mover. And that happens all the time. In a competitive marketplace, all industry-leading companies must contend with competitors trying to unseat them. Unless they, you know, live in a monopoly or operate in a monopoly, which is, you know, extremely rare. Now, there are various reasons a company may be able to maintain market share, but it all comes down to some type of competitive advantage. That's how they keep it. So for Google, it's been search technology. simplicity of what they do. Now, for Apple, it's been software and design prowess. So they not only do they make beautiful phones, but they make great software that runs on those phones and only those phones. Now, in the case of Research and Motion, they were out-innovated. And that's always going to happen. No company's reign as the leader of an industry lasts forever. It can last decades, but it does not last forever. So you can be in a company like Apple, who is the leader right now in the smartphone world, and you know, you could argue technology, hardware generally, and maybe even software. Will they be unseated by somebody eventually? Absolutely. It may be next year. Maybe next decade. Maybe 3 decades from now. It's always hard to know exactly. But that's why you do your research and constantly monitor the companies that are out there in the marketplace, especially the companies that are in your portfolio and their competitors as well. Now, for investors, the goal is to identify how easily a competitor can eat away at their business, at their market share. Some industries, it's easier than others. It takes less capital, really, to start a software company. You hire some programmers and you come up with a great piece of software that could unseat even the biggest guys. And that's why the technology industry is so volatile. And you can make a lot in the technology sector and you can lose a lot very quickly because the industry moves fast. And most of the best companies are there because of their software. And their infrastructure and their platform. Okay? So, in another industry, for example, think of energy, oil. It's a lot more difficult. That's why Exxon's been so big for so long. Because it takes massive, massive investment to duplicate their infrastructure. So understanding industries is very important, especially when it comes to growth names. You know, there's a lot of growth names that were shale plays, right? They were out innovating the Exxons of the world. Didn't make them bigger, just, you know, made them grow faster. But they were also at the whims of oil prices. And their business was not diversified like Exxon's. You see how complicated the dynamics of each industry can be? So you need to look at industries as a whole when you are doing your research. And especially when you're trying to buy growth companies. Especially in a market now where growth companies aren't going to do nearly as hot as companies that are good earners, okay? Now, of course, no company can grow in excess of the economy forever. Otherwise, they become the entire economy. So massive growth always slows down simply due to the law of large numbers. All markets become saturated at a certain point with additional revenue, you know, really runs out. And that's what's happening now with Apple in the smartphone space. They've spread their wings all throughout the world, and it's hard for them to grow that market. And that's really their growth driver. It's been their growth driver, their largest portion of their business, and it's still very large. So to get growth, you have to grow another sector or area of their business dramatically, which is very difficult. So stocks with high P ratios above 50, high price-to-sales ratios above 5, tend to be poised for market disappointment because eventually, either the law of large numbers kicks in and their growth suddenly decelerates from 100% year over year to 50% year over year. And at those levels, the price the market has priced in extensive growth, and a small deceleration will cause a strong downside volatility in that stock. So understanding market expectations and being realistic about the prospects of a company's growth is very, very important. So don't get greedy. Don't get caught up in the hype. Let logic be your guide. And, you know, that's how we guide ourselves at KP Financial. And that's how you need to in order to compete with the likes of us, the professionals. Now we're here to provide some perspective and to answer your money questions. You can reach me right now on our 24-hour listener line. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. And are you new to investing? Financial education is a never-ending process, and it begins with the basics. And understanding how markets work starts with you having an interest and then identifying the credible resources that can shed light on the facts and what matters. So I hope we can be, and we are, a piece in that puzzle. We're not going to be the only piece. You shouldn't be the only piece, but hopefully we're a good piece. And can we help you sort things out? Give us a call. 888-99-CHART is our direct line. You can get through right now.
Hi, this is Matt here in Minnesota. I have a question for you. I've been listening for a while and heard some of your recommendations. And I know it's always been said when you own stocks, don't sell at the low. Always wait until they get higher than that. So don't sell at the low. I know that. But then on the other hand, the other day you mentioned when it comes time to sell some stocks and that, take a look at them and see if you'd buy them today. And if you wouldn't buy them today, then get rid of them. So I guess my question is, if I have some stocks that are doing really bad, say GoPro, for example, and there's no way I would buy it today, then I should probably unload it by the one philosophy. But then the other one on hand, it says don't sell and it's at its low. And I don't know how long it'll take for GoPro to ever climb back up to $40, $50 again. So the two kind of conflict. Can you please explain to me when it's a good time to sell? Thanks. Love the show. Bye.
All right. Well, this is a very difficult one for everybody. The big question is, what's its low, right? What's a stock's low? You never know when the low is, and they don't ring a bell at the low, just like they don't ring a bell at the high. You know, for GoPro, it's one of those growth stocks that I talked about at the top of the show, and it's fallen from grace because its earnings growth has really turned quite negative. And the question you have to ask yourself is, does GoPro have, or whatever stock you're holding, does it still have good long-term prospects? Is the price down because just the economy is down? Is it down because it's a commodity company and the commodities that they produce or they sell just isn't doing so well right now and it's eventually going to come back? What's your time horizon as well? Can you wait long enough for the commodity market or just the economy as a whole to come back? Is that company in risk of going bankrupt, right? Research in Motion eventually, I believe it was bought out, actually, it's not bad. It's still going, but it's been low for a long, long time, and it's just kind of sitting there. So it's low, but is it the low? Are they eventually going to go bankrupt? That's possible. You know, that's what you have to think about as well. What is low? It's easy to say, oh, you sell when it's high, and you buy more, or don't sell when it's low. But, you know, a company could be going bankrupt. And so selling now when it's low is much better than not getting anything at all when it goes bankrupt. Right? So it's not just that simple to say, oh, you buy low and sell high. Well, that's obvious. You have to understand the business. You have to understand the economy. Why is something down and why is it up? If it's up, is it up because of sustainable things or just short term? Now, how do you manage fear and learn how to manage risk? You read, you listen, you gain perspective, and you ask questions. So ask us a question. We're here to help. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you reach us 24 hours a day. All Okay, the plus side of working longer. More and more people are working longer these days. So I'm going to discuss kind of the trends and how you should be thinking about the potential for you to be working longer and are there any benefits? So I wanted to discuss that. I also want to talk about this proposed disaster of a Tesla SolarCity deal that was announced after the bell yesterday. It's not a deal yet, but it's a proposal. And I'm going to talk about why it would be a disaster. And then I also want to discuss CDs. What to do with your cash? What are your options for cash? A lot of people are wary of a lot of asset markets now, bond market, stock market, real estate market. I would argue all are overvalued to some degree. And there are different options that you can look at. Okay? So we're going to discuss that. And then return on equity versus return on invested capital. These are two of Warren Buffett's favorite indicators or metrics for how strong a company is, how profitable a company is, how well they do for shareholders. And I'm going to go over the differences and similarities. And I think this is these are metrics that you need to look at, I think, for every company that you are considering buying. All right, so those are my main talking points today. But I want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Now let's take a quick look at the markets today. We had the S&P, where am I? The S&P down 3.5, the Dow was down about 49 points, and the NASDAQ was down about 10 points. Really a decent start to the day and then kind of faded throughout the rest of the day. We have the Brexit vote coming in tomorrow, and I think the market's underestimating an exit vote. And I think the main reason that is, because if you look at these polls and how they're done, is they're calling people. Well, they're calling home phones. They're not calling cell phones. Who has home phones these days still? Well, mainly older people. Just how it is. Younger people tend to have a cell phone. And if you look at the demographics of who's going to vote, well, the older people are tending to vote stay, whereas the younger people are tending to vote leave. So I think it's a little bit underestimated. I'm not predicting that there's going to be a leave vote, but I think it's a much higher likelihood than the market is giving credit for. So it'll be interesting to see how that comes out tomorrow. We might not get the full results until Friday morning, but I think it's going to be a pretty wild end of the week. Now let's go to a text question. This is from Tom from New York. He said, what are your thoughts on NICE Systems, N-I-C-E? I want to know if you think it's a good company for a long-term buy and if now is a good time to get in on it. Thanks. I love your show. N-I-C-E is the symbol, and this is a technology company. It's an Israeli developer of software in areas of fraud protection, security, and public safety for enterprises. P is about 19. Growth is in the mid-single digits in revenue and about the mid-double digits, mid-teens on earnings per share. Yields about 0.8%, so not a big dividend, but it does pay something. $3.7 billion company, so it's on the small to medium share size or size of a company. Let me look at their key statistics. Operating earnings yield is about 4.5%. It's kind of low for a low growth company. Modest amount of debt. I'm looking at their debt. This is a tough one. I know they're doing all right from a debt side. Low debt. I like that. I don't hate it. I don't love it. It's not my favorite thing in the world. I kind of like the area that they're in. The chart is kind of neutral, but that's it could just be a big consolidation phase after going from the mid to high 30s middle of 2014 to the mid to high 60s, the middle of last year. And with the overall market, it's kind of cooled off. So I would give this, I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. I kind of like it. I like its area of the marketplace. And I like that they have modest amount of debt. Return equity is 15%. You know, not a high grower, but you're not paying a lot either. So, you know, I give it a 7.5, 8 out of 10. Now's the time to call with your question or share your investing experience. Call our anytime line and record your question at 888-99-CHART or send a note directly to me. You click on the Contact Justin button on investtalk.com.
Trying to understand how to evaluate some of the oil stocks.
Got a question for Steve or Justin? You're the best person to ask it at 888-99-CHART. And now's the best time. Whether you're looking to buy, sell, or invest in real estate, the complexities can be overwhelming. It's important to have the right team around you to assure you that you achieve your objective. Having a licensed real estate agent, Justin Klein, as a principal of our firm, allows us to guide our clients through any real estate transaction. For any questions about real estate, contact Justin directly. Just click on Contact Justin on investtalk.com. Continue with this Wednesday, June 22nd, Invest Talk. What do insiders get that others don't? Special watch lists to give you an idea of the types of investments the pros consider when exploring a certain asset class. Webinar archives, hour-long lessons on how to invest properly. Sign up for free. Be an Invest Talk insider. Go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab.
Let's go to Bill in San Rafael. How you doing, Bill?
I'm doing well. Thanks for taking my call, Justin.
No problem. Ready for you?
I hold some shares of Microsoft in a pretty balanced account. Mm-hmm. Mainly looking, you know, holding it for growth and income. I'm a couple years away from retirement. Is it, you know, and I've held it for several years. I have a pretty decent gain there. Is it something you would hold in my situation long term? Going forward?
Well, it does have a pretty nice dividend, 2.8%. You're entering retirement, so I'm assuming income is going to be a somewhat important part of your strategy going forward.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
And their dividend, it's pretty safe, I would say that. Is it a great value here? I'd probably say no, it's not a great value here. But it is a very profitable company, good, strong cash flows, even though those cash flows have kind of dwindled a little bit recently. But I do think their acquisition of LinkedIn strategically makes sense. They might have overpaid for it, but I think that makes sense strategically. The return on equity has been declining. That's what worries me a little bit. It means that their debt's been increasing, but their profitability has been declining a little bit. Return on assets has fallen from 23% all the way down to 6% recently. So they could need to turn some things around. You know, I don't hate it. I don't love it, though. I'd give it like a 6 out of 10, you know, maybe a 7 out of 10 because of that stability of that dividend and you're going into retirement. It will certainly go down if we go into recession, so don't think there won't be volatility. You know, its beta is 1.22, so it's a 20% more volatile than the overall market. And it has really peaked out since the market's peaked out in the kind of middle to latter part of last year. And but long term, it's a profitable company. I think the new CEO is much better than Steve Ballmer and any of the ones that have been there in the past. And so I think they will strategically do some good things. and that dividend is pretty safe. So if you're looking 10 plus years out, I think you'll be all right. I just don't think it's maybe the best in the space. You know, I personally rather own Apple. I don't know if you own Apple, but I rather own Apple over Microsoft. But, you know, it's not a bad company to have in a diversified portfolio going into retirement.
Sounds good. Appreciate the insight.
No problem, Bill. Thanks for calling. That was Microsoft MSFT. Now, speaking of retirement, there's a growing number of people, retirees or potential retirees, that are foregoing retirement. And the reason is because they usually don't have enough money to retire. Now, currently, Social Security payments are only a source of income for about a third of all retirees. It means that's what they live on, or they're going to live on. And Fidelity data indicates there $91,200 was the average 401k balance in 2014. You know, the last couple of years have been kind of ho-hum in the market. So it's probably still around that number, maybe 100,000. But most financial experts claim you should have about 6 to 8 times your annual salary saved by the time you retire. And, you know, I'd agree with that. I'd say it's probably even a little bit more. Especially now that if you're a 65-year-old man, the average lifespan is 84. If you're a female and you're 65, the average lifespan is 87. So if you get to 65, there's pretty good odds that you're going to get into your mid to late 80s. Now, many argue that if you do four things, you have a pretty good chance of living to 100. One, you're proactive about taking care of your health. I mean, you go to the doctor and you eat fairly well. Two, you do not have any major illnesses like diabetes or heart disease or anything like that. Number three, you do not smoke. Obviously, that's pretty important. Number four, you're not overweight. Also very important. So if you do those four things, there's a pretty good chance that you'll actually live close to 100. Now, current projections are that 25% of today's 65-year-olds will live into their 90s. And as of recently, 19% of today's labor force is over the age of 65, compared to only 12% of the labor force 25 years ago. And nearly one-third of all Americans aged 65 to 69 are not working or seeking jobs. That's up from one-fifth 2 decades ago. Sorry, are they now working? They're working or looking for a job. So, you know, there's more people that are doing that. So this is an environment where if you need to focus on saving more. And this can be very important to have money in retirement and even just having a part-time job in retirement is important if you can delay your Social Security payments until you're 70. Every year you wait, there's an 8% increase in your yearly payout from Social Security. So a logical goal for everybody should be 10%, saving 10% of your income. Now the average savings rate is about 5.5%. You need to be saving 10 plus. And you need to have about, I would say, 8 to 10% of your annual salary saved by the time you retire. If not more. Okay, so start thinking about retirement and don't be afraid to work a little longer. Especially if you don't really have any particular direction you want to take once you do retire. So many people get to retirement, they retire, and they want to come out of retirement. They want to do something. They get bored. So be aware of those potential downfalls when you get to retirement. Now, there are certain privileges to being on the inside, being an InvestTalk insider, to help get you the inside track. And when you're an InvestTalk insider, you have new opportunities to learn with concise, simplified reports written personally by Steve and myself and others at KPP. There's important topics like annuities. What are the pros and cons? Wills and trusts, retirement programs, life insurance. There's tons of ETF lists. that on different types of industries. There's dividend focused ETFs. There's growth focused ETFs, foreign ETFs, income ETFs, etc. You can get all those for free, and you can sign up right now on investtalk.com.
If you have a question about our talking point today, the plus side of working longer, there's a link to a related article on our website homepage, or you can send a note with a question. To do that, just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin, and they will get back to you.
Hello, Justin. Hello, Steve. Raphael from Jersey. I'd like you to look at a stock for me, one that I've owned for about a week, week and a half. It is called VCA, and the ticker symbol is WOOF, W-O-O-F. And as the name implies, it is a veterinary company, and it looks like it's going to be a successful endeavor. I love the show. Calls are great. You guys have a wonderful day. Bye.
All right. He's looking at VCA Inc. The symbol is WOOF, and the reason is because they provide veterinary services through a network of 682 hospitals and 60 diagnostic laboratories in the U.S. and Canada. Has had a pretty big run, fell off early part of this year into the mid-40s, and has rallied hard into the high 60s now. So it's clearly doing well from a chart perspective. Earnings expected to grow 21% this year, 11% next year. Revenue is growing in the low teens on average over the past couple of years. Good cash flow, no dividend, $5.4 billion market cap. It's a decent-sized company, mid-cap company. Its cash flow levels are good, but it's certainly not cheap, I'll say that. Operating earnings yield 6.3, not terrible, but not doesn't get me all revved up and warm and fuzzy inside. I like the company. I like what they do. The return on equity is in the high teens. It's where I like to see it. However, it's just expensive. So you can ride the momentum for the short term, but realize that if you do have a recession, this is a company that will probably hit the skids as well to some degree, because people will naturally spend a little bit less on their pets. It tends to be somewhat anti-cyclical, which is good. One of the reasons probably this is getting such a high bid is because people are really moving into anti-cyclical names, and this is one of them. But at these levels, it's not a good value at all. Is it extremely overvalued? No. I would say it's modestly overvalued. I would give it a fair value in the mid to low 50s, and it's in the high 60s now. And I would really love to buy it maybe around $40 a share. So if you're looking for a trade, a momentum trade, go for it. It can keep going. But don't think that you're out of the woods from volatility. And this could certainly decline if the market kind of falls out of bed, which is I think will probably happen this summer. Now, let's move to a big piece of news that came out after the bell yesterday, and it is the tentative offer. It's not really an offer. It's kind of a release of a plan for Tesla to buy SolarCity. And Elon Musk says the offer to buy SolarCity from Tesla is a no-brainer. But is it? And the market doesn't like it. The Tesla was down over 10% today, and it closed near the low. This is already a company that has just raised capital, and they're having trouble because they're burning cash. They're incinerating cash, and they're doing it with the hopes and the promises of huge growth in the future, which they may or may not actually succeed at. Now, here's three reasons why this deal would be a disaster. One is, there could be no deal at all. Frankly, this would be an all-stock deal, meaning they would have to issue more shares, which they already did. They just issued a capital raise. It wasn't quite $2 billion, but maybe I think it was between $1.5 and $2 billion. They would have to raise another $2.5 to $3 billion to buy SolarCity. Now, there's obviously family ties. Musk owns 20% of SolarCity and 20% roughly of Tesla. The CEO of SolarCity is Lyndon Rive? Reeve? I'm not sure how to say it. But he is Musk's cousin. So there's a lot of kind of nepotism here, a lot of corporate governance issues. So I think it's just bad strategic planning on their part. And the deal is likely to become more controversial for investors, given that both companies need a lot of capital. They're both burning a lot of money to fund rapid growth plans, which is well and good, but they got to turn to profitability at some point, and they need to stay solvent in the process. Tesla needs to focus on their Gigafactory, ramping up Model 3 production, etc. And they don't need to add a sizable debt position and fund SolarCity's growth. Just a bad overall, bad strategy. You need to focus. They're already kind of, there's not a lot of indications that their production of Model 3 or the Gigafactory are ahead of schedule by any means. Does that mean they're behind schedule? It's hard to know exactly, but they're certainly not killing it on that front. And, you know, Musk talked about synergies, but there's little in the way of synergies. They're going to assume upwards of $2.5 billion in debt on SolarCity's balance sheet. And what kind of synergies are there between a solar company and a car company? There's just not. And it's going to spread Tesla thin. It's highly complex. And it's not part of their core business. And he says Elon says, well, this is going to be an end-to-end solution. You can have solar panels and you're going to drive a electric car. But is that what everybody wants? I don't think every Tesla owner wants that or can't have that. Maybe they rent. So maybe it just doesn't make sense for a lot of people. All right, now let's take a quick question from Will in Los Angeles. He called our anytime line at 888-99-CHART.
This is my first time calling. Just heard about the show. And basically, I'm a young guy. You know, I'm about 27. And basically, I want to ask for someone who, you know, is in long run, as most likely not going to be working at a corporation, is going to be doing, you know, either sort of freelance work or someone working for himself, not going to have a corporate 401k. What kind of investment vehicle would you recommend for someone who's going to start out with maybe $2,000 or $3,000 that doesn't have the big enough amount of money to go to the big mutual fund companies? What kind of investment vehicle would you best advise for someone who wants to put $2,000 to $3,000 aside for the next 20 years, not touch it, and then see that money grow? Thank you.
All right, well, that's simple. It's just a Roth IRA. I think that's the best way to go about it, and open that at a brokerage firm, whether it's Fidelity or Schwab or wherever, and then invest in no-load mutual funds. I think that's the simplest answer. Now, you're listening to Invest Talk. I'm registered investment advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein, and we have time to get your question in before the hour is up. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is our anytime number.
Hi, this is Mike from Ohio, and I listen on the podcast. The question is, how is what you guys do different than day trading? You know, I know that you're buying and selling stocks every day, and day traders as well. I know you call it investing, but is it really that much different? What's the difference? Thanks.
All right, well, we don't buy and sell stocks every day. I would say maybe on average we do one trade a week. It's not day trading. You know, we will do maybe swing trades here and there depending on what strategy we're employing. So I definitely wouldn't call it day trading. I've done day trading in the past. I've been somewhat successful at it. It takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of discipline. It's hard. But it's not day trading. It can be more described as swing trading, with a portion of our strategies, and other parts of the strategy. It's long-term investing, value investing, and that tends to be our tilt. Right? Now it's time to discuss your cash levels, and what to do with your cash. And I feel bad for a lot of people out there because in this environment, it is extremely difficult to find good yields, safe yields. There's low-risk options like savings accounts and CDs, but it's almost impossible to get much of a yield. You're going to get near 0% interest rates. And if you want to take more risk, you can get a higher yield, but you're going to take more risk. And I see this all the time. People are chasing yields. And the next recession, which is probably sooner rather than later, is going to wreak havoc on these risky investments that people are thinking they're doing great with this 6, 7, 8% return. So what are your options for cash if you want to keep it safe? Well, there's high-yielding savings accounts, and you know you might get upwards of 1%, maybe, in this environment. There's short-duration bonds, but you know they got to be high quality. You don't want junk bonds because that opens you up to that higher risk that I'm talking about. Or you can do CDs, and I think CDs and laddered CDs is a pretty good strategy. Now, what are CDs? CDs are time deposit accounts issued by banks in different maturities. There's CDs as short as 1 month, and there's CDs as long as 20 years and almost everywhere in between. Now, why are CDs so good? Well, one is they're very safe. They're FDIC insured up to $250,000 per depositor, per bank, per account ownership category. So if you had a joint checking account, an IRA, and a savings account at a bank, and you put a CD in all of those, well, you'd be insured up to $250,000, you know, if you put $250,000 max in each one. Now, one strategy you can use is to ladder them, and I think laddering is a pretty good strategy. And laddering is simply you buy a CD, say you take let's say you take $10,000 and you put $2,500 in four different CDs, one 3 months out, one 6 months out, one 9 months maturity, one year maturity. And then you roll it. So 3 months from now, that first one comes due, and then you buy a 1 year CD from there. And the one that was a 6 month CD has now a 3 month CD and so on. And you kind of ladder those out. And that's what we kind of do with our laddered corporate bond strategy in our balanced income program. Obviously, there's a little more risk than CDs, but that's a strategy that we employ. And I think it's good for a lot of people, but there's some things you need to consider. One is, how much cash do you need today? You don't want to overcommit yourself and have to liquidate your CDs, and some many times that can be either at a loss or maybe sometimes it's just simply losing the interest that you were getting or some of the interest. Depends on your bank, so you have to understand what the surrender charges are if you do need that money. So knowing what cash you need today, what are your cash flows in the future? You're going to need a bunch of money in 3 months, 6 months, a year, whatever it is, and try to match up your liquidity with those cash flows. Right, so laddered CDs is a very safe way to get at least some decent amount of yield. It's not going to be a lot in this environment, but it can be a good strategy for some people who want to be super safe. Now, time to close it up for the day. If you'd like to schedule a portfolio checkup with Steve, we have some new dates posted on investtalk.com. He'll be in San Ramon for those individual retirement reviews on June 28th. Then I'll be in San Jose on June 29th, and I think he only has one slot left for San Jose. I think he has a couple in San Ramon, but only one slot in San Jose. So if you want a San Jose slot, call ASAP. To get on the schedule, just go to investtalk.com, click on the InvestTalk tab. I'm Justin Klein, Executive Vice President of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today. Let's meet up again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis. and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing.